to be like? Is it going to be a V shape? Is it going to be a W shape? Is it going to be L, whatever? And it's almost the wrong question to ask, because no matter the shape of the recovery, the composition of the headline number, be it jobs, GDP, products, whatever, will be dramatically different, right? And that's really the important thing. So if you're thinking about the shape of the recovery, you're underestimating the impact, because the big story is the composition.
Okay, we're recording. This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today was nominated by Sean Flynn, and it's Arnobio Morelix. Did I say your name right, Arnobio?
Arnobio, yeah, you got it.
Oh my God, I did it. Okay, and Arnobio is, first of all, you're the Chief Innovation Officer at Startup Genome, and you're writing a book called The Great Reboot. So first of all, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. So, you got two interesting projects and a lot of other stuff under your belt, but I guess, first of all, what is Startup Genome?
So we are a innovation advisory company, and we help governments in over 35 countries with their innovation policy. And that's anywhere from South Korea wanting to develop strategies so they can have more of the new generation of tech companies, right? They had amazing technology and companies in the 70s in consumer electronics, but not as much of the new generation. So we help them with that to, you know, Denmark on their strategy of becoming a number one green technology hub.
Oh, that's amazing. And now, so your new book, The Great Reboot, it was somewhat inspired by recent events, but maybe you can kind of start with like what it's about and what the thesis is.
Yeah. So I'm the author of this book called The Great Reboot, which is about how to navigate the trends in technology, in the economy, in the post-pandemic world. And not just in the next 1 to 2 years, but the next 1 to 2 decades. And I chose that name for the book because for the first time in 100 years, the economy is literally shutting down to start again. And not in just 1 or 2 countries, but everywhere. And much like a computer with a new operating system rebooting, the systems that blink back to life will be very different from the ones we left behind. And, you know, functioning in some fundamentally different ways. There's tons of inspirations I've had for the book. One that sticks in my mind is on February 2nd, I got this really weird email from a business contact in Beijing. And they were saying, it was like 2 lines, and they were saying something like, please do not come to Beijing now due to the coronavirus situation. We had the trip scheduled for like 10 days later. And they said, reconsider your trip to South Korea. And that was our stop before China. And that got me thinking like, oh, like what's going on here? And that's when I really started investigating the topic, looking at it and studying it into more detail, building new strategies for it. And in March, I started the Great Reboot project proper, you know, with a website and things like that.
That's amazing. So first of all, like, you know, part of your thesis is kind of consistent with one that I was sharing with you before we started recording, which is, you know, I'm looking at how companies can work together. But the first step is to make sure that you're on an innovation path, make sure that you're aligned with, you know, what you describe, which is trends, right? So what trends are you seeing that you're trying to, or that are part of your thesis? Like, what's your innovation model that's in the book?
Yeah. That's exactly right, Michael. I think to take a step back, the book has 3 parts. So part one is about the 3 waves of the Great Reboot, how it will develop over time, as well as a framework on how to think about the economics of pandemics and, you know, what that means for markets, products, things like that. Part two is about the 4 circles of impact of the Great Reboot, which we cover of, you know, how this major shift will affect the circle of home life, work life, city life, and the world at large. So 4 circles and the impacts happening on them. And part three is what I call the new operating system toolkit, which are, you know, precise frameworks, actions you can take to navigate what's to come. And especially on how to think about the impacts of the technology we all create in society at large. So at a high level, those are the, you know, the frameworks we're looking at. If I have to tease out one change that unfolds in several different ways, is that, you know, we're moving dramatically faster from an analog economy to a digital economy. And that was already happening before, but, you know, changes that maybe we thought would take 10 years to happen, happened in 10 weeks, you know, rise of e-commerce, public schools that not in another 10 years wouldn't be thinking about remote learning have to think about it now, and several other things. And this, you know, this shift, of course, is a long-term trend, but it really got accelerated, and that's the core of it. There's many ways we see this already, right? If you plot your favorite tech stock index compared to traditional industry stock performance, you're already going to see, right, the tech companies are already way overperforming the traditional economy companies. And you know, just this week, I was on LinkedIn, and then they have news headlines, right, that they pop up. And the two headlines I had were, one of them was worst contraction on record for the economy, and the second one was big tech has a record-breaking quarter. Both of those were the top two news.
Which makes sense, though, because it's like everything's moving into the guys that were aligned correct with the trend. And to your point, the trend just got like shrunk and accelerated, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's crazy. And yet there's these guys are pulled before Congress a week ago. So I don't know what that was all about.
Yeah,
talking,
you know,
about
it's
breaking up the four big job creators the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's complicated topic. Obviously, they're very, very well positioned for this new world. You know, they're one of the few organizational types that help us continue our lives, you know, less disturbed than they could have been. And that's amazing. They create a lot of jobs, a lot of wealth, a lot of innovation. And then at the same time, you know, there's these questions about what's their longer term impact on upstarts and startups. And I think it's a big open question.
That is true. I guess there is a concern that they're getting too big and in too many categories, which goes back to that conglomerate model. I mean, I think all four of those, and I kind of talk about that in what I've been writing, which is they are definitely a modern day example of combining technology with a conglomerate model, right?
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's really, really growing across categories. It's impressive.
I'm still not sure how I feel about them being pulled forth, talked about like antitrust laws, but
yeah, complicated, super complicated.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So the third part of your book, you talk about the new operating system framework. What are kind of some of the points in that? Like, how do people use that to navigate what's coming or what's happening already?
Yeah. So one of them that really helps with that is what I think of as the economics of the Great Reboot. And if you look at the impact of the pandemic from a more traditional economic framework, it's kind of simple to understand, actually. We have a kind of input, which is moving people and goods in the analog world, got a lot more expensive than it used to be. So used to be cheap for a shoe-meeting person, but then all of a sudden it got expensive, risky, whatever that might be. And, you know, if you look at traditional economic analysis, when the price of an input goes up, what happens is that the demand for the substitute for that good really goes up. So, like, for example, if chicken got more expensive, we might start eating a lot more fish, right? So we substitute away from the thing that got more expensive. And then the other thing that goes together is the complements of those things that are rising in demand, also rising demand, right? So like if we're eating a lot more fish now, maybe we're gonna eat more chips too. And that's really one of the key frameworks we can use to see how the opportunities and how the new markets will open up. And a perfect example is like, yeah, you know, Amazon is having a record-breaking performance because buying stuff in person got really difficult. So the substitute e-commerce got have a lot more demand, but the complements of that are doing well too, right? Like FedEx and UPS, they benefit from it also. So looking at these complements and substitutes and how they open up and unfold over time for your market is a very useful way of you know, identifying opportunities. I was just talking with a founder this week who has a major exit on tech real estate in Brazil. And now he's doing home decoration and home decoration marketplace. And, you know, wow. Yeah, that's like a compliment, right? Like people are spending a lot more time at their homes. It's not obvious, but if you're spending a lot more time at home, then you want to make it pretty and make it better than you used to.
That makes total sense. Because I think a lot of people, what I've observed, even like, you know, I'm in Southern California, you're in the Bay Area. Real estate, I think, has really popped because people are trying to upgrade their houses because they know they're working from home. And now they got to have a home office or they got to have a back house or something, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's very similar. And it makes sense what you're saying, which is like if you look at, you know, let's use the most extreme past example of the gold rush. During a gold rush, you know, people selling picks and shovels and engineering services and wagons, they all rose with that market, right?
Yeah, picks and shovels. That's it.
Makes total sense. I love it. So, and what's the timing of your book and how would people find that?
So the book maybe launches in... No, we do actually.
Okay.
We have a publication
date. Should have checked that before.
So you're good. So it's December 2020, the book will be published. And we've just went live with a pre-publication campaign in August 5th. And we'll do that for the next 30 days. And you can participate. You know, the pre-publication campaign, the goal is really to get the people really interested on the topic, engaged, and as beta readers, to help me refine and help, you know, share their own stories. And you can learn more about that on greatreboot.com. And if you go now, there's an early bird discount through August 19th.
So what do you think is, you know, what do you think the long-term effect of this is? Like, do you think that what's going on with this disease, because I mean, coronaviruses are not new, but obviously the reputation of this one has gotten a lot of attention. Do you think it's actually going to continue on? If there's a vaccine, does that change anything? Or do we become a world that's continuously vaccinated now against coronaviruses? Whereas, you know, I guess I'm kind of curious what you're seeing long-term, like how do you really play out? And I don't know, maybe it's a function of being a biologist, but I'm not a biologist, so I don't know.
I'll answer this in two ways. One of them is the, let's call it the vaccine timeline, 18 to 24 months. Nobody really knows. I certainly don't. But, you know, those are some of the credible estimates out there until we have a vaccine, not just have a vaccine, but have it deployed, right? Like we all saw how long test kits took to get deployed everywhere. So let's think about that timeline. And then let's think about the 10, 20 years afterwards. And, you know, one of the things that I want to make crystal clear is that this is not really a book about the pandemic. This is about the shifts that have been triggered by the pandemic, right? Yeah. There's this great metaphor I learned from some folks at a group called Institute for the Future. And they say that, you know, this is like, you know, just like we're exposed to viruses and bacteria all day, every day, we only get sick when we're vulnerable to it in some way, right? And this is like society was sick and fragile in some ways that the virus is exposing. And the virus didn't really cause a lot of these things. Certainly, the, you know, when we talk about analog to digital and certain economic shifts, the virus didn't really cause it, but it sort of made obvious, right? And when we think about the original timeline, you know, this 18 to 24 months, there's really the impact will be in three waves of the Great Reboot. Each country is in slightly different levels. In the US, we're at the beginning of the second wave now. And I previewed some of these concepts on my column for Inc. Magazine, where I serve as chief data scientist. So I encourage folks to
we'll include that, I think,
in the Google and check it out. Perfect, yeah. So the first wave is really about shocks and substitutes, where we're living in lockdown. The cost of doing anything in the analog world skyrocketed. Sometimes it's impossible, right? We're literally not allowed to do certain things. So what you have is the substitutes for this analog movement quickly rushing in. And that happens first on the things that are easy to substitute, right? Going from an in-person meeting to a Zoom meeting is easy, great. Going from, rather than showing up for a store, you order it on Amazon, that was easy. We all already had Amazon accounts, the payment infrastructure already existed, all of that. So first wave is really about this shock and about the quick to turn around substitutes. Second wave is when we start, you know, settling in a uneasy adjustment. And that's what we're in the beginning of in the US now. You know, we had what, at least for unemployment numbers, was the fastest recession on record for the United States. It was, you know, highest unemployment number since the Great Depression, just in about a month and a half of lockdowns. Mind-blowing that how fast it happened. And unemployment is still incredibly high, but then it starts getting lower because people start adjusting in certain ways. And what happens at that point is we start, you know, substituting the things that were not so easy to substitute at the beginning. And here's an example. You know, if you are a robotics company or some sort of manufacturing, automation, sensoring, whatever that might be, you got hammered in the first wave. Because the factories were closed, you could not really get your job done. But on the second wave, you get tremendous benefit because you're a great substitute to having a lot of people inside a factory floor at the same time. So you got hammered at first, but then now you begin to see some benefits because people want to adopt technologies that get less human one-to-one interaction in the workplace, in factories, and all of that. And then finally, the third wave is the adjustment. Once we have a vaccine, and once a vaccine is deployed, and we're more or less able to do the things we were allowed to before, there's really two things that will happen. One of them is we will try to make up for the time lost, and you know, I think there might be something like a roaring 2020s, you know, at the third wave. After the Spanish flu, that's when the roaring 20s came about, you know, a time of great parties and people getting together and really living up the things that they couldn't during the time of the Spanish flu pandemic. Roar, like
like
roaring 20s.
I could see a war. Because there's a
yeah,
lot of
I could see there. A war too, but that was not what I'm.
Well,
claiming.
If there's a war, I want to form a robotic army with you.
There you go.
I digress. So the yeah. adjustment is and making up for lost time.
Yeah, we make up for lost time. You know,
that makes sense.
And it's and you know, I think that's actually one of the really important points that got me wanting to write this book, because I saw people both dramatically overestimating the impact of the Great Reboot, but then a little paradoxically also underestimating. So they overestimated when they say, you know, there was an article last week that was headlined "The Death of Cities and How Remote Work Will Kill Cities All Over." And it's like, people will do a lot more remote work. Absolutely true. There'll be new forms of hybrid teams, new forms of distributed teams. But there's a lot of other reasons we live in cities that are not work, right? Like cities are not going to die because of that. So people overestimate it. And when you're in the middle of the crisis, it's easy to do so. But then they also underestimate it. And, you know, one of the things I see debated a lot is, what's the shape of the recovery going to be like? Is it going to be a V shape? Is it going to be a W shape? Is it going to be L, whatever? And it's almost the wrong question to ask, because no matter the shape of the recovery, the composition of the headline number, be it jobs, GDP, products, whatever, will be dramatically different, right? And that's really the important thing. So if you're thinking about the shape of the recovery, you're underestimating the impact, because yeah. the big story is the composition.
There's probably an element of nostalgia there, which is, let's get back to normal. But I think what you're seeing, which is what I'm probably seeing, is that you said it with the composition of what the future holds is not the composition of the last 10, 20, 30 years, right?
Yeah, exactly. It will be totally different. And that's really, you know, one of the big takeaways. So if we go back to the third wave, you know, one of the parts is this people making up for lost time, because humans want human interaction and have done so for thousands of years. That's not going to change in a couple of years time frame. But then also, we are going to realize that a lot of the things that we used to do, we don't really care to bring them back, you know? And we're also going to have built new infrastructures that will make those things a lot easier and better. And, you know, we'll go back to the office at some fashion once the vaccine is in, but probably not in the same way that we used to, where everybody was required to at a certain time and present in a certain way. And we'll have new infrastructures that will make this easier, right? You know, right now we have Zoom, but, you know, Facebook is doing some future of work initiatives that's about re-envisioning the workspace. This will come in play and will be a substitute in many ways for analog work. Another example that really comes to mind for me on that is at Startup Genome, we hosted, every year we do this Startup Ecosystems event. And usually it's hosted by the Next Web in Amsterdam, and we're co-hosts of the Ecosystem Summit. That's how we usually call it. Or the City Summit, it changes a bit year to year. And we did that this year. The Amsterdam event, of course, was canceled, so we did it online. And this was maybe a month ago. It was, in terms of attendance and the speakers, it was probably the best one we've ever had.
Wow, that's
great. Because we did not have, I know, it was amazing. Because it was, you know, all of a sudden travel wasn't really a limitation, right? And we had the Prime Minister of Serbia, the CTO of Amazon, cool. Top executives from Google, deputy mayors of Seoul, deputy mayors of London. It was just an amazing event, you know. And I spoke at it, and the other executives at Startup Genome spoke and participated. And, you know, it's really an example of certain things that when we do it in the new way, we're going to realize that they are better. We're not going to want to let go, even though the need, acute need for social distancing will fade away.
Yeah, and I applaud everybody finally catching up to us on Zoom and working remotely. So,
yeah, great.
I'm a little sad that, you know, it's no longer a rebellious thing, but not much.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know you have a distributed team, right? How is how is it for you now that every client probably is on the same?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, we saw a big rush of people like trying to fix problems, right? Trying to, you know, they probably put off a lot of things around CRM and marketing automation and building products. And there was a big rush like March to probably May, June. It probably calmed down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But, I would agree, yeah.
You know, I think it's a better way to work. I think that I love travel for personal, but for business, I think it's a terrible thing. And I'm kind of almost happy about this change. And I think it'll present more opportunities, which you highlighted one, which I've experienced. And I want to invite you actually. So for example, on August 16th, my wife and I have been doing these monthly Zoom house parties.
Nice.
Yeah. And I think it's been a really good thing because we actually, first of all, connect with people that we normally wouldn't connect with. Plus we've been inviting two or three of our friends for each one to be kind of featured where we have a conversation with them. So I've met some pretty amazing people in the last 4 or 5 months that I probably never would have met before.
It's fantastic.
I think like, you know, we had the last one, we had Daryl Davis, who I don't know if you saw the episode of the podcast on here, but he's a R&B musician that's played with Chuck Berry for 32 years. And he's convinced 200 people from white supremacist groups to leave the KKK.
Such an amazing story. It's like,
I hang out with him all the time. He's a great
amazing.
Guy.
It's amazing.
It's crazy. David Meltzer was at the last one, and David is a super inspiring guy. And then actually my wife and I were on his live yesterday. So, and we met Eric Lee yesterday, who's the co-founder of LinkedIn.
Fantastic.
It's like, I don't think if you had gone prior to this, that those people would have been as accessible. They probably weren't making such an effort to be on those digital platforms. So I think it's a real bonus. It's really opened up some opportunities.
That's exactly right. You know, like what you described last there is the same impression I've had, you know, like for so many of these folks, you wouldn't, you know, like present at something online. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But now that everybody has to do it, it opens up new opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. So in a lot of ways, it's an exciting time. It's a little frustrating for others because you see the power and the pain of bureaucracy. And I think, you know, we got to really rethink those things because government can't be in a 200-year-old model and we're going into the future.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, but that's, we'll see. There's probably a lot of resistance to change there. Well, listen, I want to be conscious of your time. Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you think that we should?
You know, one of the things of the other side, really, of the Great Reboot, because, you know, we talked a lot about the opportunities that it opens up, especially for tech companies, and especially for founders, right, who have the flexibility to respond to these opportunities. The other side of the coin is the responsibility. And now, you know, there's this great quote from Vint Cerf, who's one of the fathers of the internet, is chief internet evangelist at Google, which is a fascinating job title, by the way. I find it pretty cool. And he has this group called Innovation for Jobs, which is really about, you know, thinking, how do we create jobs for everybody with meaning in this new world? And he started that a few years ago with my good friend David Norfors, and I'm honored to be a part of the network. And he's really narrowed in this importance of the responsibility for tech companies. And then he says, you know, geeks don't usually envision the impact of the things they create. And he says, I didn't envision all the ways the internet could unfold. But now that we, the tech community, are such a big part of the world and so large, so much leverage, so impactful, there's a lot more responsibility on thinking about the unintended consequences, both positive and negative, of what we do. And I think that's the other side that to me is important.
I think there's a lot of stuff being thrust on corporations, and it's like, we're looking at, you know, there's an element of governments are not that good at serving our needs, or they're good at other things, right? But, you know, again, it's a slow old model, and the people that we're looking to for the help in areas that we should be getting from that infrastructure are the people we work for. So it's kind of weird, because I think, you know, there's lots of calls for that would affect everyday people around security. There's problems with public concepts of healthcare. There's public education problems where, again, it's an old model that refuses to reform. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have the belief that entrepreneurs are who change the world.
Absolutely.
So
I'm 100% on board with that.
I think the challenge is, how do we help more people become entrepreneurs and affect their own change? Because I think these giant corporations will morph into governments because they're just going to be large and bureaucratic, whether they're digital bureaucracies. So I think, to me, it's really important that our education of people be around entrepreneurship. And that might be to be a designer, that might be to be a musician, whatever, but there has to be an element of, okay, the responsibility of the individual is to create.
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely. You know, I think, and one, maybe it's what you were hinting at too, when you talked about people putting responsibility on corporations. I'm 100% against this general discourse that's very anti-tech, very anti-tech companies that kind of see some of the things that look at like downsides, but don't really see that, you know, they've been kind of the infrastructure creators that kept the world running.
Right.
So I see that absolutely. Yeah. I 100% agree with that. Yet, I think especially if we as a community want to keep the, you know, the role we've received that in society of these like important organizations that are, you know, looked favorably as relevant and impactful and are welcomed in people's homes, right? On their pockets, on their everyday life. that, like, as a community, we have this responsibility, you know? And I think we better be proactive if we want to avoid things like, senseless intervention.
Well, I think that the more that we look to corporations to be our daddy, the way that we look to governments to be our daddy, the worse things are going to be at those corporations. I don't know if they will continue to be the innovation machines. And when you thrust that responsibility on them, I guess the thing that I worry about is that they will accept it.
Look, I hear that. And, you know, what I'm talking about is especially, I think it's really two things. You know, technical debt is super common, right, for companies. And
technical debt, yeah.
I think we have a bit of a shadow twin of technical debt, which is fairness debt. And you know, sometimes just like technical debt, you choose to go with it. I think Zoom might be an example of this recently. And by the way, like, this is a concept I'm introducing on an essay for a book with O'Reilly that's coming out this fall. And I also bring in inside the Great Reboot book. And, you know, Zoom as an example, they grew really fast. Right. And it's amazing how their infrastructure held up. It held up really well. And perhaps I'm not privy to their, you know, internal decisions, but I could imagine how, as they were scaling their infrastructure, they decided to not prioritize as much as they might have done otherwise cybersecurity questions, right? And there started popping up some cybersecurity concerns with Zoom. And I see that as very much as, you know, fairness debt. Like, they sacrificed something that is important for some users to grow faster and, like, prioritize other things. Just like we do with technical debt all day, every day. Sometimes you do it on purpose. And, you know, you have to pay later, as they did. And they did do it. They pay later, right? They hired the four Alex Stamo, a guy at Stanford now and former chief security head at Facebook and Yahoo also.
Well, and Dan Guido, shout out to him. I don't know if you know Dan. Do you know Dan from Trail of Bits?
I don't think so.
Oh, he was hired to rewrote the code on Zoom.
That's awesome. Great. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
We love to talk with him.
Dan, we need a friggin' button to make it so I can automatically let someone share. I don't have to push it every time. That would be an idea.
Good idea.
Push it once in the settings.
So, you know, like, and if you look at their stock performance, it's hard to disagree that that was a really good decision. And
very true.
And yet the debt is there, you know, and you're going to have to pay somehow. If you don't pay it, then you have reputational costs. You might have regulatory costs. Sometimes you have market problems immediately, like your users start dropping. Like, I'm sure that Zoom, you know, it's still the best alternative is what we're using now.
Sure.
I don't know every platform, right? But it's the platform that I use. Yep. But, you know, if they had persistent cybersecurity problems that were not addressed and a competitor came along that did, they would have market problems, right?
Very true. I
hear you, and I totally agree I don't want the corporation to be the daddy thing.
Exactly. Be your own daddy.
But I do think it's important that we take on this responsibility as we get bigger, you know, like, because otherwise if you don't pay off your fairness debt, you know, like, it's gonna come back with interest later.
Maybe. Yeah. I think, first of all, the future of cities is something I'd love to talk to you about in the future. About, I happen to think that we should get rid of all city councils and mayors and stop electing people, and we should give a contract to Amazon to run the city. Because then it's mass customized.
It's an intriguing proposition. I have to think about that.
It's like, listen, we're collecting all this money. Everybody, stop fighting over what you want. Just everybody get what you want.
Oh, one thing I'm super worried about now is, like, how the cascading effect, right, effects on cities of all this crisis, and how we might end up with bankrupt local governments, because, you know, first you have the jobs going away. And by the way, this is, like, something that Gary Ball is from his chair of Future of Work for Singularity University. He tuned me into that, you know, you have jobs and then the jobs start going away and then the businesses start failing, partially also because people are not buying. And then that turns into lost tax revenue for cities. And then we might end up with a really serious problem with, you know, local city councils, to your point. Maybe like we had in Detroit, you know, in a previous generation.
It's totally an issue. And I think the corruption of cities is being exposed. Like there's an LA councilor that for 15 years, they just booked them for traffic, for basically being the gatekeeper financially on every building that was built in downtown LA. You look at what's going on in other cities like Seattle, you look at cities like Portland, you look at cities like New York, and there's, you know, can people rule people in such a complex situation?
Yeah, you know.
Or should we just give the contract to Amazon?
I don't know. It's an open question.
It's a thesis. Yeah, so I'd love to talk to you about that in the future. Listen, I want to be totally conscious of your time. We could probably go for hours here. I'm going to wrap up with a couple quick things. First of all, how do people get in touch with you?
So there's a couple ways to get in touch with me. Number one, I hope you go on greatreboot.com and participate on this pre-publication campaign about the book. I'd love to, you know, share these concepts as they are being developed and start, you know, making this stronger, really dynamic for the world. So that's the number one way. Number two is you can find me on Twitter and LinkedIn, and I use those quite a bit. If you Google my name, there's not many Arnobio Morelixes out there. So you're going to find it quickly. No worries.
I thought Devlano was a unique name, but I think you got me beat.
It is very unique, yeah.
It's a made-up name, but that's another story.
Great.
A couple of final things. How are you changing the world?
You know, I'll give a very domestic answer. I became a dad recently past year. Yeah, thank you. I'm on paternity leave as we speak. And if I'm totally honest, I think that would be the number one way, you know, like it's just such a transformational thing to be raising a kid and, you know, and the things I do with him matter for decades to come, you know, not just next year, not just in the next month, the next financial quarter, but they matter kind of forever. And it feels very deep, you know, and feels very emotional to think about the how that links back to our collective ancestors, you know, and the human experience.
Yeah, not enough people like kids anymore. So I applaud you for being a great dad.
I know. Well, there's you know, especially here in the Bay Area, there's not many kids around. It's quite interesting.
Jeez, so crazy. Have you ever read the book 1984?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, we got one. You'd be shocked. So you know what? I'm starting to add that question because you'd be shocked how many people have not. And I think there's some really interesting lessons for today. I don't know what your opinion is, but
well, it's super timely. I think the fact that technologically, now we could operationalize that and are operationalizing that in some parts of the world.
Right.
I think is very, very important. You know, one of the things I talk about on the book is, yes, you know, I present specific frameworks to think about how your technology will affect the market and society at large. But there is a quadrant, and I name it like the four quadrants of unintended consequences. And one of them is unknown unknowns, really hard to do. And the tools are a little fuzzier. But one of them is, you know, bringing in science fiction to how you think about your technology. And there's actually some precise groups that do that really well in San Diego, at Arizona State University. There's a group in Paris that does that really well. And one of the quotes I mentioned is like good sci-fi can predict not only the cars, but also the traffic jams. So, you know, when you talk about 1984, that's a very important thing to think about on how this can affect our world today.
Well, I'm excited you've read it, and I'm going to keep asking the question because it concerns me how many people have not, and considering what we're living in, it's kind of weird. Okay, the final thing is when we have interesting guests on the podcast, we like you to nominate other interesting guests. We typically talk to experts or entrepreneurs. Sometimes it's about how to grow your business with systems and software. But increasingly, we're talking about the future. So who would you, Arnobio, like to nominate as a future guest of Automate and Grow?
How many slots do I have?
How many do you want?
I'll mention three that quickly came to mind.
Oh, cool. Okay, great.
So one of them is Eric Qualman. He is a marketing and social media expert. He wrote a New York Times best-selling book on social media called Socialnomics. And he has a new book out just now called The Focus Project. I haven't read it yet, but I ordered it. So I saw some of the things about it online. And it's about, you know, how to navigate these tough times we're in now on a personal level. You know, how do you find focus in a complicated world? So I think that's one of them. The other one is two good friends. One is Dane Stengler, who is an amazing thinker about the implications of policy and government and entrepreneurship and how those two intersect. I think you're going to have a really good conversation with him because he's when you talk about city councils, when you talk about federal policy and things like that, he's pretty he's thought a lot about that and worked on that a lot. And I think you guys are going to have a great back and forth. And from my quick preview with you, I think you're going to disagree a lot too, which I think will be a great podcast conversation. And then I would also nominate the CEO of Startup Genome, JF Guti. He, when we think about innovation policy and startup ecosystems, he's one of the foremost experts. And I think you guys would have a fantastic conversation.
That's amazing. Well, first of all, thank you for nominating three amazing guests. We got Eric Coleman, Dane Stengler, and JF from Startup Genome. You've all been nominated as a future guest of Automate and Grow. Arnobio, I want to acknowledge you for the work that you're doing, and I want to make sure to invite you to our August 16th Zoom house party.
I'm game. Thank you.
Oh, as well, I'm thinking, I don't know if you're interested, but maybe we can do a Facebook Live to the Founders Pack group.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about that. I'd love to learn more.
Terrific. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate your time. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode of Automate and Grow.